Welcome back, Seahawks fans, to the newest episode of the Seahawks Nest Podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Channel, joined as always by the Airbud to my lassie. It's Kevin Garber. Kevin, how you doing?
I knew I was going to be Airbud, and I could not wait for it because you know what? The rules don't say a dog can't play.
There's nothing in the rules to say a dog can't play basketball. Dogs can play, dude. It's a doggy dog world out here, man. This is a crazy Seahawks news week, though, so we got to get, like, directly into it. We cannot waste time talking about Airbud yet.
Can't chase our tails on this one.
Yet. Okay. I want to start at the top. Sam Howell trade. Okay. So the Seahawks traded for 23-year-old Sam Howell, starting quarterback for the Washington football team last year. He had 21 interceptions, 21 touchdowns. Is that correct?
Yep.
I didn't write it down. I tried to remember it. Seahawks gave up basically the equivalent of a mid-fifth for him, depending on whose draft value chart you trust. Basically, we traded from the third round down to the beginning of the fourth. The middle of the third round down to the beginning of the fourth round. In exchange, it was
basically we reversed the trade that we did with Denver last year, where we traded back for the fourth and got a third to get Anthony Bradford. And in this instance, we basically just like redid the trade, but this time we got Sam Howell.
And we also gave them a fifth for a sixth, but I'm just going to tell you something about me, and maybe John Schneider agrees. At the fifth, sixth, and seventh round of the NFL draft, you are mostly throwing darts, and you are throwing different darts than the other teams. It does not matter quite as much to move down 20 spots in the sixth round. It's significant, but it's not like I'm saying
somewhere around pick 150.
Yeah.
You're throwing darts. Like, every draft has like between 120 and 160 dudes that you're like, these are NFL players. And then there's like 100 and something guys that you're like, these could be NFL players.
I mean, even that first 100, you're projecting.
Well, of course. But you feel better about those ones. Like, whoever you're picking 179th or 190-something or 160-something, you're like, this person has some traits that look like the NFL.
Yeah, so let's start with the trade, like, itself. Sam Howell, the player. I'm just going to say Sam Howell, the player, okay?
He's the man.
He's very cheap. The cost to get him was not very high, and we needed a backup quarterback. It is well known. If you're in the Discord, you already know this. I think Sam Howell is a trash can. Like, I don't think he's a great football player. He struggles to protect the ball and to navigate the pocket. Two things that I think you have to do if you're in the NFL. That being said, to get a young developmental quarterback who has, shown he can do some things in the NFL. He's an NFL arm. He can run. Like, there are positive qualities here. And let's be honest, Geno Smith was a trash can for his first 6 years in the NFL as well. And he turned out to be pretty solid.
He was a trash can in kind of the exact same way, too. Yeah. He held on to the ball too long. He threw too many interceptions. But he had deep ball accuracy. And he had, like, an ability to make a play. And he could pick up a first down with his legs. And those are the things Sam Howell can do.
Yeah, so it's fine. Like, he's a backup quarterback, and he's like the 35th best quarterback in the NFL. He's one of the better backups in the NFL. Okay, now we go into the season where if Geno gets hurt and Sam Howell has to play two games, it's not going to be an absolute dumpster fire. It's going to be a roller coaster, but probably not the worst thing you've ever seen in your life, because the offensive line we're going to field with just Charles Cross is better than the offensive line that the Washington football team had last year. What a disaster.
We literally don't have a left guard right now, and it still might be better. Our top four might be better than their five.
Ryan Grubb will not just keep doing the same offense, even if the offensive line is playing so bad. He will change stuff to try to help the quarterback. So yeah, I'm fine with this trade, even though like I said, I'm not a huge fan of the player. I think fifth round is about the right amount of value to give up for Sam Howell. He's still young. He's younger than Michael Penix. He's younger than Bo Nix. Like, it's completely fine. There's nothing wrong with this trade. We get 2 years now. Do we get 2 years? Two years of cost-controlled Sam Howell to kind of pair up with Geno.
For about a mil a year, yeah.
And hopefully over the next 2 years, we find the high upside guy that we actually want. And this is the bridge that gets us to the good quarterback, because the best teams are usually the teams with the best quarterbacks. You gotta have that kind of great one to go all the way. It's hard otherwise, but yeah, I'm completely fine with it. Even like I said, I'll say it again. I don't really think Sam Howell is that good. I did write down one thing though. Sam Howell, Kevin, is he the perfect fit for Seattle because our regional food is chicken teriyaki? And he only eats chicken.
A really natural fit. Yeah.
He only eats chicken. This is like perfect. He's going to come here and he's going to be like, what is this chicken teriyaki? And we're going to be like, it's everywhere, bro. You'll love it here.
And then he's going to re-sign here. We have a lot of Korean chicken places. Like, maybe if you like chicken, we're good. He might be just our like career long-term backup for cheap.
Do you think this will get him to eat a salad because it comes with a little salad? You know, maybe he'll finally eat a salad. Anyway, we re-signed Fant, both of them, George and Noah. George is back.
The Fants.
Please rise for both the national anthem. Yeah, we can now run the 2-10 and heavy set with Fant next to Fant. Let's start with Noah.
Noah had the highest upside of the three tight ends, so I'm happy to have him back. I think we maybe paid like between $500,000 and $1 million more than I probably wanted to for him, but I also think in this offense he's going to produce in a way that's going to make that, like, we're paying him like the 12th best tight end, and I think he might be the 13th best tight end. Like, I'm not going to concern myself.
The Pharaoh Brown thing too, that's the backup tight end we got. One thing I like to do is when there's a player like that I don't know hardly anything about, the stats aren't really exciting, I like to go to the other team's subreddit and see how they reacted to it. New England Patriots fans were pissed, which makes me think, yeah, this is a good number two tight end. Yeah. like this is the kind of guy, like, he's going to fill a role, he's going to do his job, which is exactly what you want a number two tight end to do. This will allow Noah Fant to, you know, get a breather, not kill himself blocking, and be like the kind of upside move tight end that we want him to be. So yep. Very exciting moves at tight end. George Fant obviously just gives us a huge floor over, you know, losing Abraham Lucas. Someone that the Seahawks maybe can't be confident is going to be healthy. It's much better.
Fant can play both tackle spots, and he can play them both at like a low-end starter level, yep, as opposed to rolling out the corpse of Jason Peters and like a Jake Kurhan. Like, yes, this is a size of – we went from – when Abe Lucas was out – we had like maybe the 100th best offensive tackle situation in football. And this brings it up to in the top 64, even with him out.
Yep. I think that we have, if Lucas can't go for whatever reason, you know, he's got the degenerative knee condition, or if we have to move him into guard because, you know, we just don't find the guards that we need in the offseason, and now Bradford and Lucas are our starting guards, then I think Fant is fine. Fant is a fine right tackle. There's nothing wrong with that. A starting offensive line in week one of Cross, Lucas, Olu, Bradford, and Fant is not the worst offensive line in the NFL. It is somewhere around 20th. And I can live with that, especially considering, you know, what's going on. I'd love to see them add, you know, obviously a big guy who can step up and be huge. But, you know, this is not a dumpster fire like it has been some past years. All right. Leonard Williams, he's back.
I'm happy.
Like the McRib. I think the contract is...
Unlike the McRib, I actually am happy.
No, Leonard Williams, I think the contract's good. It's a good, solid deal. They did a good job like making it. It's palatable. It does kind of suck because it feels like right when that contract's ending is when our window's really going to be super open. Not that we can't win the Super Bowl next year. The NFC just keeps getting worse and worse. Seems like every week
if we have a really strong draft, we could be really contending next year.
Yeah,
I agree. Now, the flip side of that, though, is if his contract's ending right about then, that means that if we need to go make a push for a big player, his money's coming off the books right about then. So yeah, you could argue that might be a good thing.
Yeah,
it's not like he's going to suddenly stop aging. So, like, if the concern is that that's when he's going to start being too old, then him coming off the books when he gets old isn't the worst thing.
Yeah, it's a good deal. He's a really good football player. He's the 10th most expensive defensive tackle in the league. He's probably about the 10th best defensive tackle in the league. It's a right size contract. Something the Seahawks have gotten good at is getting guys to come back on right size contracts as opposed to having to overpay, which is a good skill that John has got here. Got people kind of buying into the program.
How excited are you to have Uchenna Nwosu, Boye Mafe, and Leonard Williams
and all Draymond on the field Jones
at the same time because of what Leonard Williams does for Draymond Jones? Yeah.
Like, I feel it.
That's gross.
I feel like McDonald has kind of shown with Justin Madubuike that he has the ability to develop these defensive linemen, and get his defensive staff has had the ability to kind of get these defensive linemen to overperform maybe where the people kind of thought they were. And so, yeah, having him working with Draymond, I think, could be a revelation. You know, Draymond is a big ball potential. That's what he's been his whole career. What you see flashes of it every once in a while, and you're like, that's the guy we want every play, but he's just never been able to put it together. This is his shot, because if he doesn't do it this year, he is not getting another big money contract.
Nope.
So he's really got to shoot his shot this year and really make big plays. Speaking of shooting their shot, Daryl Taylor, back on a really team-friendly deal. They restructured and then extended him, and the deal is really nice, I think, for the Seahawks. This is the kind of player, we've talked about this a million times, just needs a role. Then that role is designated pass rusher. Don't ask him to do other stuff. And if they can figure out how to get him on the field in that role, he is going to terrorize opposing defenses.
Last season, Kyle Van Noy played like 450 snaps, and like 320 of them were rushing the passer. And he got 50 pressures and like 8 sacks. Congratulations, Daryl Taylor. You are young Kyle Van Noy. This is your life.
If that's
a good role for him. He can do that role. Like, he's already shown he can do that role.
If they can do that, man, it's just gonna, the sky's like, he can get 11 sacks. He can get 12 sacks. This guy just needs to be playing a role and not, because the problem is, if you put him on in a rundowns, other teams know. They're aware that they can just run straight at that guy. Okay, we're not leaving the offseason here without any linebackers. We signed Dodson from the Bills, Baker from the Dolphins, these two guys. So let's start with Jerome Baker, because I think it's a little bit easier of an analysis, especially when
the guy who has multiple years of NFL starting and productivity is the easier analysis. I agree.
when you go to the opposing, I go to the opposing team subreddit, and this one, they were like, yeah, that sucks, because he's a guy who does his job. He's very consistent.
He's Mr. Pink. He's a professional.
He's never hurt. The only time he got hurt apparently was when one of his own players rolled him on a play, and yep. He was out for 4 weeks. So yeah, just a really, really good, solid football player who kind of fills a role, does his job. And, he's going to be our kind of rock in the center of the field.
And now, I think his skill set is really similar to Jordan Brooks' skill set. I really think it's a pretty lateral move for a pretty equal contract value too. Like, it's fine.
Less dynamic athlete, but probably better overall, head on his shoulders at this point in his career, at least.
Yeah.
So that's probably why. And then why we swapped. Because we swapped Dodson for Brooks. That was the trade. They got Brooks and we got Dodson. They got Baker. Now Dodson comes from the Bills, and there's a lot of hype, because he was Pro Football Focus's number one rated linebacker last year. So I watched him a lot, and PFF. This is maybe the biggest indictment I could make of their ratings after the debacle with Ryan Neal, where he was the number one rated safety 2 years ago. Even though
I will say this rating is a lot like that rating, where like, he's not a bad player. I just am curious where that number came from.
Exactly. It's like, Dodson's not bad. Okay, first of all, they take him off the field.
I think it's because he overwhelmingly didn't do bad stuff.
Okay, yes. This is the thing. They take him off the field on third downs.
Yep.
Let's just start with that. Like, right away, okay? Then he's Pro Football Focus's highest rated coverage guy. Well, yeah, but he doesn't really play that much on pass downs, because he's never on the field on third. Never on the field. He played like 500 snaps. Okay? The thing is, he does like good stuff on the football field, but I think you're projecting a little bit if you think this guy's going to be like incredible. He is a good role player. He's a very good special teamer. I'm going to throw that out there right away. This guy will contribute to winning football, even if he never plays a snap at linebacker for the Seahawks, because he will be awesome at special teams. But he's fine.
You should feel about the way you should feel about the Jerome Baker signing. This is a competent NFL linebacker who can come in and provide a floor on a contract where, if he ends up being the backup, if you draft a guy, you aren't sad about that, because it's a slightly pricey but good backup, or a very cheap and like decent starter.
Good fit for our division as well. I'm going to throw that out there, because San Francisco obviously loves to run the football. The Los Angeles Rams have spent an offseason signaling that they're going to load up the box and run the football. And this guy is good in the run game. He is good at like reading and reacting and stop and filling gaps in the run game. So I think he'll contribute. I'm wary of that like 90 plus rating in coverage and stuff. Cause I don't see that. I don't see that when I watch him. And I think
he can cover running backs and tight ends, but if you're asking him to cover slot receivers, it's going to be like when KJ was asked to cover slot receivers, in that you're going to feel bad.
Yeah. He's just, he's good. He's a good football player. Like, he will be a contributor. I'm very excited that we have him, because now if we don't get one of the, you know, good linebackers, the Peyton Wilsons of the, what are the best linebackers in the draft? Jeremiah.
We're going to talk about that today.
Oh, that's today. Okay. Kevin has now figured out that I'm not tracking very well what positions we're doing anymore. I basically am done watching draft players, and now I'm no longer like really keeping track of what's coming up. So yeah, this is a good solid enough linebacker draft, but like there's a couple guys that you'd love to get, and
they provide a floor where if we end up getting a lotto ticket guy or something, yes. If you roll in with Baker and Dotson as your starters, you're fine with that. The other thing is Leslie Frazier connection. Came over. Leslie Frazier was a coach on that Bills defensive staff. That's a good sign that he clearly thinks this is a player that can come in and play for this defense. So I like that too. That tells me something good.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That is a great point. And I like didn't totally forgot. I usually am good at picking stuff like that. All right. Rayshon Jenkins is signed to be one of our starting safeties. The other starting safety right now will be Jordan Love, and then probably some sprinkling of Jarek Reed in there. Rayshon Jenkins is a football player. It's just like these linebackers. He's all right. Yeah, he's solid. He's rock solid. Like this guy. Okay, Kevin, these three signings. Can I tell you what this reminds me of? You know how like last year I was like, the Texans aren't trying to lose. They're loading up on these veterans, and they're like, these veteran guys that are like, none of them are like amazing, but they're all just like solid football players, right? This feels like Texans Texans 2 years ago and last year, where it's like, they're not trying to lose. They're just like loading up with these like solid veterans. And they're like, yeah, you know what? We're going to roll a competent NFL football defense out here. And then, you know, we're going to let DK Metcalf boat race you. In their case, it's we're going to let CJ Stroud go crazy on you. But like, it's the same idea, right? We're going to be competent. We're not going to suck.
On social media, I feel bad because like that's kind of the point I end up making, because all these people are like, we just keep signing all these Jags, you know, like this is just a guy, another just a guy. And I'm like, yes, you realize that this is basically John Schneider self-actualizing. Because his whole thing is, hey, I want to have a starter at every position before I go into the draft. So having just a bunch of flatline competent people is really what John Schneider wants. And then our splash is like, you know, Leonard Williams, who we already know is a good fit because he's already been here. Like, so your splash plays are keeping your draft picks, or maybe you traded for them the season before and you retain those players, but you already know that they're a good fit. You're not wondering how they're going to work out here. And then you're just surrounding them by a bunch of competent, capable. It's like, you know, if you're a Mariners fan, how much do you just want a guy who hit 260 and not be ass? And like, we just signed a bunch of those players. And that's what our football team is now. Like, if we get the 40th best guard to come in and play left guard, that is right in line with the strategy so far, where we just have no gaping hole on our roster.
Yeah, the thing is that these guys are all NFL caliber players. They're none of them. We aren't picking up guys who can't play. These guys can all play football. And like, even the guys that I maybe was a little less than positive on, like they all can fill a role on a winning football team.
And what franchises basically look like this.
And I do.
This is how the Steelers handle their offseason. Yeah, this is how the Packers handle their offseason. This is how the Ravens handle. This is how stable teams handle offseasons.
I do suspect that, you know, we're looking at like a 9 or 10 win team again this year. And I think some people might think like, oh, that's bad because we still kind of need a quarterback to be after Geno. And I don't disagree with that per se, but like, you don't need to bottom out to get the quarterback. Kansas City made the playoffs every year and then they still got Mahomes. Like you can be okay. Like you can still be okay football. You're going to have to pay a cost. at some level. And that cost doesn't, the cost doesn't have to be losing a bunch of football games. The cost can just be losing picks, losing, you know what I mean? Losing other things. And I don't think you necessarily want to be like the Vikings, where the Vikings are looking to give up 4 first round picks for a quarterback. And if it doesn't work out, guess what? Their franchise is a dumpster fire. I think you want some semblance of stability outside of that, that makes it so like they, when they trade up for Drake May, if Drake May is not good, guess what's going to happen to the Vikings? They will be irrelevant. And I don't think you want to put your franchise in that situation. So, like the Cardinals or whatever, you know? Yeah. So, okay. There's a couple quick hitters that just are Seahawks adjacent. Russell Wilson to Pittsburgh, along with Justin Fields, which is the
Russell Wilson what in Kenny Pickett can't pick. Kenny Pickett pulls a Russell Wilson and can't handle it. Kenny Pickett out. Justin Fields
what
in.
A baby, by the way. Kenny Pickett. What a baby. I want to be the starter. Like, I'm not going to be the guy who dresses to be the third string quarterback. Like, God, Kenny Pickett is mentally weak. He deserves to be out of the NFL or whatever.
And you know what that told me? That told me Kenny Pickett doesn't self-scout.
No. You dude.
Because if Kenny Pickett watched Kenny Pickett play, he would understand why Russell Wilson's playing.
Sam Howell has more career touchdowns than Kenny Pickett. And Kenny Pickett's played for like, what, 3 years, 2 years? I don't know, more years. The Wilson to Pittsburgh thing, that's going to be a disaster. But like, yep. the thing about thing about Russ and Justin Fields, putting them on the same team, is like they're both the same player, like just one's taller. But they run a little bit. They can really throw the deep ball. They can kind of run an offense if you build it around them. But the problem with both of them is they cannot navigate the pocket, and their sack rate is going to be crazy.
Yep.
Like if you look at Justin Fields too, like even in college, his sack rate was like 8-9% behind the awesome Ohio State offensive line. And then of course CJ Stroud comes after him, and his sack rate is like 3%. And because he has no clue how to navigate the pocket. And it's something that, what they did in Ohio State is they just gave him half field reads and gave him kind of simple stuff. And he crushed it. Justin Fields was really good in college. You can build a winning offense around Justin Fields the same way you used to be able to do that around Russell Wilson. I don't think Russ can run enough to overcome the deficiencies, but yes. You know, we'll see, I guess. I think that Fields will be starting by like midseason, and that the Pittsburgh might be like decent with Fields, depending on what Arthur Smith is able to put together for him. But that is just a weird situation, and I do not like it. Okay. And another thing too is like Arthur Smith as a coordinator had like the highest rate of over the middle passes of any coordinator. Russell Wilson just won't throw over the middle. So it's a match made in hell. I'm so excited.
Unstoppable force and the immovable object on this one.
Aaron Donald's retired. The bad man can't hurt us anymore. Rest in peace. See you later, Bozo. Ever since he tried to come out and fight, was it with Justin Britt with his helmet on? I've like hated Aaron Donald ever since then.
How can you be so accomplished and so weak?
Yes. Like how can you be such like a little baby when you are literally the best defensive tackle to ever play football? It's very annoying.
He's very big to be so fragile.
Yeah, it's just soft. I don't. Yeah, whatever. Good for him for retiring at 32 before he has too much brain damage. It's probably too late anyway, though. Okay, Kevin, tell me, what's the first position we're doing this week?
We are looking at tight end.
Oh, tight ends. All right, here we go. Let's start off with number one. It's an easy one. Brock Bowers. If you don't have Brock Bowers.
I have Brock Bowers.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you don't have Brock Bowers first, Kevin, I'm firing you. Brock. Brock Bowers is an absolute unicorn. He is one of one. Just a joy to watch on the film. He is so good. He's good at everything you ask a tight end to do. This guy should be a top five pick, but he won't be because 4 quarterbacks will probably get picked in the top five.
And like Marvin 3 Harris. Receivers are getting picked in the top 10.
Yes. I mean, he might get bumped down. If he's available at 16, I think the Seahawks should run, not walk, to the podium with the card that says Brock Bowers on it. He is that good because you take the best talent. This is one of them.
Brock Bowers is George Kittle without injuries. Like the way George Kittle just kind of does everything and about that same size. And he seems kind of small for how well he can block. But when you watch the video, like he can handle linebackers and secondary players. But I was watching him block SEC ends, like edges. And he was very capable. Like, you know, he doesn't have the most physical advantage when blocking them, but he can competently hold ground against them.
Yeah, people were worried about the weight, you know, but it just doesn't show up on the tape. You know, you just like you don't look. And then another thing, too, is like you can hand because he has legitimate 4.48 speed. You can hand him the ball on a sweep. You can use like a you can do like a tunnel screen to him.
Yeah, he's doing they did tight end screens at Georgia, and he would just it was like it was a common play to pick up a few yards.
I'll say this. He weighed in big. Bigger than people expected at 243. I think people were expecting 230s. So like it's still small for a tight end, but it's not crazy small. And I think his frame is not maxed out. Like I think there is room for him to gain muscle and thing. And another thing too is just the way other people talk about him. Like there's a Georgia Players podcast that Georgia Players have, and then they asked someone came in and they asked like, "Hey, who's the biggest freak on the team?" And they're just like Brock Bowers. You like look at him and you think he's an accountant, and then he takes his shirt off and you're like, whoa. Yeah. It's like, oh.
I was going to say, if you remember the movie Con Air, they talk about him kind of like Garland Green, where you're like, this guy looks unsuspecting. And like, no, don't even talk to that guy. Don't even make eye contact with that guy.
Like, don't. Like, and I think we're scared, you know, that he would weigh in at 230. He wouldn't be able to be an inline tight end the way that you hope, but at 245. Yeah, there's no doubt anymore. This guy is ready to rock, ready to roll. I am all in on Brock Bowers number one, and if the Seahawks pick him at 16, I'll be there's only one player who's kind of like in the top 10 range that I think could fall that I think I would be more happy about. We'll get to him I think next week, right? It's Quinyon Mitchell. It's Quinyon Mitchell. Everyone knows. Okay. Yeah. All right, Kevin, who's your number two tight end?
This is a little hard for me actually. There's a bit of a debate, but. Because my next one is a two-player tier. Brock Bowers is in a tier all his own. But yeah. I did end up going with kind of the chalk pick, and that's Jatavion Sanders out of Texas.
I agree. I think Sanders might be in his own tier as well. There's one player
I'm a little high on a guy. We'll see if it's the same guy.
This guy. But, you know, he's not Brock Bowers. It's Jatavion Sanders. But he's a good blocker. Jatavion Sanders is a really good blocker. He's really reliable. Just nice hands. Great job. Like just he's never drops anything. It's just like really fun to watch him.
He's a really smooth athlete. Like he's one of those people when you watch him, he gets the ball and he can like transition the ball. He transitions from a pass catcher to a run after the catch guy in a way that you almost don't expect from a tight end. Like he like very smooth athlete that way.
He does not turn 21 for 10 more days, which I think is a huge plus.
Because it's 6'4", 245 with basically 33 inch arms. There's a chance he gets bigger.
He's crazy young and crazy good. I suspect he'll go towards the top of the second round, like higher than most people are projecting. Cause like right now the average position on big boards is 55. So I think he'll go a little higher than that because the NFL seems to value these guys a little better. We saw it last year at the tight ends. A lot of the tight ends, except for Washington, kind of came off a little earlier than people expected. And then they were all good.
And then Jatavion Sanders reminds me of like Sam Laporta. I think it's a very similar skill set. And we saw what that was for Detroit last year.
You know, Kevin, I have two. My next two guys are really close together. So this is like where I'm wondering which of these two guys you picked for your number three. So who's your number three here?
Okay, so my number three, who I like in a similar way to Jatavion Sanders, I just don't think he has the same ceiling, is Cade Stover out of Ohio State.
Okay, that's who I have third as well.
He reminds me kind of Hayden Hurst when he was coming out of college, where he's just a do-everything guy, and he's a better athlete than people thought he was going to be. He's a converted linebacker. He has good size, 6'4", about 250. He's a good blocker. He's just not as sticky as you want him to be. So he can block anyone. He just doesn't hold his block as well as you'd like.
He's physical, but he doesn't have good technique in any aspect of being a tight end. Like, but the physicality, the athleticism, he has it.
He has good hands. His hands are strong. Like when he goes to catch, when somebody's trying to interfere, like, yeah,
he's got really good traits. He might be one of those guys who takes a year to like be a guy. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
we're at a point where he might take a year to be like the dude, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Number four.
Okay, so I do have a tiering down from here. And there's a cluster of guys who let's call them the pass catchers and the blockers. And the pass catchers can block and the blockers can pass catch, but they kind of do the one thing more than the other. And there's one guy I think that can grow into a bigger version of both. And I think he's probably who you have at four as well. That's Theo Johnson out of Penn State.
Nope.
Oh, I almost interesting.
I put Ben Sinnott fourth, and I almost put him third.
Ben Sinnott's my fifth.
These combine numbers are crazy, Kevin.
Yes.
40-inch vertical, 426-inch broad jump, 6.823 cone? This guy is out of control. This guy has every athletic box ticked you want. The problem is when you watch the tape.
Except long speed, I guess.
Even the long speed is fine for a tight end. He's 74th percentile in his 40. And his 10-yard split was 81st percentile.
Yes, so like, he's got quickness.
He's fast. The problem is when you watch the tape, he's dropping passes. I don't know what his deal is, but it's like he runs really good routes too. It's like, oh, that's a really nice route. And then the ball just like bounces off his hands.
He cleaned it up last year. His drops were a lot worse his junior year than his senior year.
Yeah.
I do think he cleaned it up, but I also noticed his senior year, he's using his body a little bit more. He's not confident going out and snatching the ball with his hands, which is why his contested catch numbers are not great either.
And then one thing I like that he does that made me kind of bump him up to four was like sometimes when he's blocking, he engages the first guy and then gets into the second level like a real blocker really does. And like I just that stuff makes me get going like and he's from Iowa. And like I'm just going to give him like the points for that, you know, like where guys who come from Iowa are good tight ends.
Well, he played at Kansas State.
Yeah, he's but I mean,
from he, Iowa, though.
He's from Iowa. So it's like bonus points. Like,
that's both of those are good things.
But I'm really into Ben Sinnott. I think he's sneaky, sneaky good. All right, let's go to Theo Johnson, who also has great physical numbers, by the way. I don't want to knock him. He's 40 with 4.57, his vertical. His three cone was way slower, and then he benched for some reason. And I think if you're gonna put up like a 39th percentile bench, just skip it. Just skip it. You don't need to do it. Like, I don't get that. He did that as pro day for some reason. I just don't understand.
So Ben Sinnott reminded me of Jonnu Smith, where he's kind of like almost this H-back move tight end hybrid, but he can block. Yeah. Theo Johnson, he reminds me of a player that I know you don't like, but he has the ability to grow into a better player than that person did. He kind of reminds me of Logan Thomas.
Okay.
Where he's got like size, athletic traits. He's improved each year because he was really raw. I think he could become kind of a Dallas Clark where he is a capable blocker and a good pass catcher, especially as like a big body target for catches at the sticks and catches in the red zone. I feel like he could especially be a good red zone weapon. He just isn't there yet. He's raw.
Okay. Guys that are outside of our top five who we think are interesting, maybe deep guys. I'm going to start with Iowa's Eric All. Here's the thing, Eric All.
Do you like traits?
Well, not only that, but like Eric All, have you seen a bigger disparity among rankers in terms of one guy? PFF has him like 100th. NFL.com has him 116th. Then other people have him like 200th, 213th, 302nd. Like he's all over the place on these rankings. And I can see why. You know why? Because he just never plays. Like he's not even on the field very much. But he does have like some good traits. He's really able to like for a guy that big, he's really able to like, I don't know, contest catches in the middle of the field and play good. He's an interesting case.
I get the feeling that there's some like coachability and processing issues that keep him off the field because he has the physical traits to be on the field. But he couldn't get on the field for Michigan to the point where they took an Indiana transfer to play instead of him. He couldn't really get on the field for Iowa as consistently as you would think. And like that's kind of a tight end factory. I'm concerned, but if you could get him in the seventh.
Okay, so Tip Raymond going into the combine, I was like, dang, this guy's huge.
Do you like offensive tackles?
I know he's big. He's basically like putting an OT on the line. And then he ran a 4.64. And I was like, oh, okay.
Did you watch his tape?
There might be something here. Like Tip Raymond, I thought he was just like kind of like a blocker dude, but no, there might be more to this. So, yeah, reminds me of, like, after really thinking about it, he's actually, like, much better than I expected. Tip Raymond's a guy that in the middle rounds, if we decide to take a tight end, I would be extremely happy with.
Yeah, he reminds me of Will Disley, where it's like, even when you look at him, even when he's doing something impressive as a pass catcher, you're sitting there like, that guy shouldn't be doing that. What's that guy doing?
He's look too big. He's 271 pounds. His weight adjusted speed score is nuts because he's 271 pounds. Well, and he ran,
that's the thing. Yeah, 7.023 cone, dude. He ran a faster three cone than DK Metcalf. I'm just saying.
Yeah, he's big. I cannot stress you enough. This guy's real big. Like, and might he be looks the biggest that big on end.
Tape too.
Oh yeah, he's huge. It's like, wow. When did Illinois get the mountain on their team? I don't know. I like him. I'm kind of into Tip Raymond. If we take him with like a fourth round pick or something, I'd be like ecstatic.
Anywhere on day three, I think it's fine for Tip Raymond.
Great, great fit, great athlete. Like, just would be fun to have around the team. Anyone else you want to mention? Kevin, get a couple guys in here.
Dallin Holker out of Colorado State reminds me a lot of Jacob Hollister. Also, his story is kind of fun. He ended up playing at Colorado State because his wife transferred to Colorado State for the track team. And he was like, yeah, sure, I'll play at Colorado State. And so he went from BYU to Colorado State and ended up with a significant increase in production and was able to kind of show what he can do. He's got really reliable hands. He lacks long speed, but he's got decent short area quickness. He'd be a solid like second, third tight end. AJ Barner out of Michigan is very similar to Tip Raymond, just not as huge.
Not quite as crazy of an athlete, but his arms are crazy. 82 and a quarter. Like, that's nuts. He's got big old arms.
Big span. So I think those are two other ones that are interesting. And a guy who he might just be a priority free agent, but I think he's somebody worth bringing up. Jack Westover, the UW tight end, he has a good understanding of what our offensive coaching staff is going to want our tight ends to do. And he is a player that is worthy of a practice squad or maybe even like a seventh round pick, or priority UDFA. So he kind of reminds me of Josiah DeGuara out of Cincinnati a few years back, where he's like a fullback tight end hybrid kind of player. He doesn't do anything quite well enough for you to be super psyched about it, but he's one of those dudes who just always seems to be there to make a big play. I think he's a player they could end up picking up.
If we didn't have Noah Fant, I would say like Devin Culp, dude, you're at 4.47 40, like give him a shot. But we have the plus version of that. We don't need to draft Tommy Tremble 2.0. So, yeah. I that's a fast 40 for a guy that size. Anyway, he's a little small though. Okay, we're going linebackers now.
Yep, and I think this is a really interesting position from a fan standpoint. What's your tiering look like on linebackers?
I didn't really think about it like that, and I now that you say it, I.
Okay, I will say there's a top probably three.
Probably three guys at the top. Yeah, yep. I was just about to say that. Probably like maybe four. Maybe you could go four.
I have really solidly three.
I mean, yeah, I think the fourth guy is sketchy, but I think you could talk yourself into it. All right, let's do number one. Peyton Wilson. Wilson number one. I mean, here's the thing on Peyton Wilson. He's old, but the tape is great. He's old. He got injured in college.
And the reason why he's old is because he got injured in college. So, because if he had been healthy, he could come out last year when he was 20, he'd have a 23-year-old rookie season.
I think Peyton Wilson would probably have been like a guy that, you know, gets picked in that Jordan Brooks zone of like late first, early second, if he just like was a normal age and had never had injuries, but he won't. And I think it's justified to be wary of both of those things. He's a Seahawks guy. Just watching him play.
Speed rusher on the blitz.
There is a little hammer. There's a little hammer next to his name. 100%.
Oh man, he scrapes really well. He's a super reliable tackler. He missed less than 5% of his tackles last season. He's a really productive guy. He stuffs the stat sheet all around. If somehow he was sitting there in the third because people were worried about the injuries, I'm not that worried about the injuries.
That's way too late. I think he'll go in the second somewhere and have a fruitful NFL career. But the and the thing is for him though, is like, yeah, you have like a 4-year window with Peyton Wilson. That's another thing, because the injuries, he's smaller. He's a smaller end for inside linebacker. Like those things are definitely going to like kind of tighten up the window for him. The guy who I have second is like the opposite of that. He's super young. He has like similar IQ, but like, because he's so young, I feel like you can project him even higher. So I went Junior Colson number two, Kevin.
Okay. He's my number three, but I really like him a lot.
Junior Colson just strikes me as like the kind of modern NFL linebacker, the linebacker for the modern era. great coverage skills. He really has a good job recognizing and reading the play. Like if you play action, Junior Colson.
Oh yeah, he's not gonna bite on the eye candy. He don't care.
You can't fool Junior Colson. He knew what you were doing before the play even started. He looked at your offense and he was like, I know what this is. And for a guy who is not yet
at Michigan, go watch how you say that.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe Connor Stallions was helping him out. 21 at 21 years old, a guy who can do that. I think the sky's the limit. He's not aggressive enough, which is why I think he's like worked his way down the board. But if this was someone Mike McDonald wanted to make an effort to get, I absolutely could not blame him. I think Junior Colson rules, and I would be really excited to see him in a Seahawks uniform. So
yeah, there you go. My only really downside on him is that I think he's a kind of stiff hipped and has a little trouble with like change of direction and lateral mobility. It doesn't show up in the run game so much, but it shows up in like man coverage. He's more of a zone coverage guy.
Yeah, well, that's what kind of defense we have. So that's all. Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
but he hasn't done any. He didn't do any of the combine stuff, right? I have no numbers for him. Is he hurt, or is he just? Did he just do? I'm a pro day guy. Is he just?
I'm a pro day guy. I'm not positive on that.
Okay, so I have no testing numbers. So like, that's one thing too, is like when I see stuff like that where a guy like doesn't move amazing, I'm always like, well, yeah, but maybe he's a good athlete and it's just like the system, or you know, he wears weird helmet. I don't know. Okay, so then I'm gonna guess your number two was Edgerrin Cooper.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Edgerrin Cooper's awesome.
I like Edgerrin Cooper. So one thing I really like, and this is something I always pay attention to in linebackers, he has 34-inch arms, which shows up in a couple of different places. One of those is it shows up in pass rushing, and I think he's probably the best pass rushing linebacker in this draft, to the point where you could line him up for snaps at edge if you wanted him to. Like, he had 27 pressures and 10 sacks last season. He's a good speed blitzer. He has a really fast first step. He's really good at spying. He reminds me of Jordan Brooks in a lot of ways, including the things that he's good at and the things he's less good at. Like, he's really rangy. He's really explosive. He plays really well downhill versus the run in the pass. But he hits when he needs to wrap and tackle, and that's a little frustrating. He has good coverage traits, but he lacks coverage reps, so you can't really say how good he is at covering.
He seems like he doesn't know. Like, he's like the opposite of Colson, where Colson felt like really well trained, like he knew what the offense was doing. Cooper felt like the opposite to me, where it's like, oh, this guy's kind of underperforming what I would expect, considering, you know, the athletic gifts.
But their coaching staff was a joke last year, so I understand.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's played at Texas A&M, and they were like in a real turmoil the whole season. My biggest junior, the thing that kind of broke the tie for me with Cooper and Colson, because I do find them to be similar level of player. The thing that I kind of pushed me towards Colson is that Cooper's like 230 pounds, and like, I don't know, like Cooper,
even Colson's just closer to 240.
Even like 10 pounds in this situation can make a huge difference. And when you say like, oh, put him on the edge and pass rush him, yeah, well, the defense is just going to throw a guard at him and he's just going to get washed out of the play. Like, that's the thing I get scared of, is like, this player is versatile, but I don't think I'm a little nervous. That said,
for me, he reminds me traits wise of Patrick Queen in a lot of ways. And we saw the success that he had in McDonald's system.
Right. You just need, he's going to need a good pairing. It's that will make a big difference. And Colson apparently does weigh 247 right now. That's like the word going around, even though he was like, so like, I think like he might be bigger. Speaking of guys that are small though, is your number four also Jeremiah Trotter Jr.?
It is not.
Okay, well, mine is Jeremiah Trotter Jr. I know it's scary to graph Clemson linebackers at any point in history now, but I just like the way that Trotter seemed to like always just like really put. He's an effort guy. He's an effort guy. He has a high motor, and I just like that. I like the effort guys. His measurables suck. They're not good. I do think that there's a chance that like Trotter ends up being the like a plus special teamer who's a, you know what, like kind of like the guys we already have on the roster, a plus special teamer who's a solid NFL football player.
I have a classification of guys in that area.
Because he tries real hard.
Jeremiah Trotter Jr., J.D. Bertrand, Tommy Eichenberg, and Nathaniel Watson are kind of all that. One of those guys, maybe two of them, is going to be Josie Jewell, where they end up actually being like a good starting linebacker, and the rest are all going to be like solid special teamers and like first linebacker off the bench.
All right. Who'd you go number four then?
I went with Maurice Lufau.
Okay.
Out of Notre Dame. I went a little more tradesy. 6'2", 234, 34-inch arms. I guess I have a thing. I feel like his missed tackle numbers aren't what I want, but when I watched on tape, his missed tackles come from, at times he's over-aggressive and overruns the play, and he'll get an arm on there and end up with like a bad arm tackle attempt. So I think if you can get him to rein in some of that tendency, I think his tackling will naturally end up getting a bit better. He uses his length really well to shed and disrupt pass, to stack and shed, and to disrupt passing lanes. He gets into those pretty well. He has a good understanding of zone coverage. He's good at handling tight ends. He's quick and he can blitz. He just doesn't have good long speed, but you know, he's a linebacker.
I felt like Notre Dame wanted him to be an outside linebacker in a 3-4. And he just didn't have the size and capability to do it. And so like I think they struggled to find like the right spot for him. And I just don't think he ever took to like a specific position like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I feel like he
was kind of a tweener,
Shaquille Leonard.
Kind of a tweener. And I just wonder, like at the end of the day, like is this a guy who needed to be 255 pounds so he could play outside linebacker? You know, like did he just,
or if you actually taught him to play inside linebacker and had him do that, could he have just done that? Yeah. And I think he has the traits and coverage ability where he could. And I think the upside of that, I value a little more than Trotter, because like you, I think there's a chance that Trotter's just like the guy you're constantly trying to replace.
Yeah. Trotter's really young too, but I mean, you can't teach speed. Like that's the thing. He's not going to all of a sudden get a lot faster. So, all right. Was your number five Trotter, or did you go in a different direction?
No, my number five is Cedric Gray out of North Carolina.
Okay, nice. Cedric Gray is good.
Yeah, I like his size, athleticism. He has good short area quickness. The thing about North Carolina's defense is that it was garbage, and so he had to be Mr. Everything for their defense. He was their one linebacker that could play at a college level, and so he had to be everywhere at the same time, and that kind of put him in a spot to be exposed at times. He was the good player on a bad defense. And when I try and mentally weed that out of what I'm seeing in his tape, it kind of gets rid of some of the concerns I would have had about his tackling and some of his coverage. Because I see a guy who shoots gaps really well to stop the run. He doesn't have the power to like hold the gap versus a blocker. And he's more of like a drag down guy than like a hard tackling guy. But I see a lot of effort. I see a lot of ability to handle coverage responsibilities.
From Feldman's Freaks List, did 6 pull-ups with a 70-pound weight attachment. That's pretty cool.
That's actually cool.
Yeah, he's just like a guy. I don't think you could stick him like right in the middle of the field. I feel like he's like in our defense, he's the guy you want on the side, not the guy you want right in the middle. You know, if we're doing the like 3-3 bare front stuff like we did last year in that defense, like I think, I don't know, it's similar. I feel similar to him how I felt about Lufau, which is like these guys are 235. They're kind of are who they are, and they're not quite edges, and they're not quite middle linebackers, and they're going to have to overcome the odds because of that, you know. But that doesn't say that they're both good.
Well, and in the modern NFL,
they're both good.
235 good shots isn't that undersized. That's the weird thing.
I mean, it's 25th percentile for linebacker weight. So like it is small, but
yeah, like Trotter's under 230.
Yeah, Trotter's tiny, dude. I already said that.
Yeah, like if you look in
these
this
guys,
draft,
these guys are small. Like, it's a small guys draft, which is why I was excited.
There's like two guys that weighed in at over 240 at linebacker,
which is why when Junior Colson weighed in at 247, I was like, dude, finally.
Yeah, because he was 238 at the combine, so it was like
247 is like super super solid to me.
Yeah,
that the I don't know. I don't really fit. Sure, fifth. I'll just use this as an opportunity to talk about Tommy Eichenberg, who is Ohio State's middle linebacker and does not hit any trait marks at all that I would want a linebacker in terms of it, but he's just a really good run defender and knows how to do his job in the run game in a way where he could immediately contribute as a rookie. And so,
okay, guy, give you a take on linebackers.
Someone to look at the end of the draft, you know, is like just guys who know how to do their job. But yeah, what you got in this draft?
In this draft, my take on linebacker is Peyton Wilson, Edgerrin Cooper, and Junior Colson are the only day two linebackers.
I agree.
And then if we're going to take a linebacker not on day two and not one of those three, I want to take them in like the sixth or seventh round. And I just want to bet on traits and take two guys and see if one of them works out. So there's all these dudes like Trevin Wallace out of Kentucky, Edifuan Olufosio out of Washington, Curtis Jacobs out of Penn State, Tyron Hopper out of Missouri, Jordan McGee out of Temple. All of them have like, oh, they run under a 4.6 40. They have more than 35 inch vertical jump. They have more than 120 inch broad jump. They have like linebacker size. They're like 235 and over for the most part. I just want to take like a couple of those guys and see, because college uses linebackers very different than the NFL right now. So
did you say Jalen? Jalen Ford?
I didn't say Jalen Ford, but let's include him. Yes.
Jalen Ford and Curtis Jacobs were like my two guys. They're like,
yeah, Curtis Jacobs was on my list. Yeah,
they're like 240 and they do some stuff, and you could get them probably pretty late in the draft and just take your shot, shoot your shot a little bit. Although, dude, some places have Curtis Jacobs in their top 100 and I'm like, that's wild. That's a little crazy to me, but yeah. Good for them, I guess. I don't know. You're right. Find a guy who does a couple things good and hope that you can like kind of mold him into an NFL linebacker. And,
yeah. Otherwise, I feel like there's a lot of Ben Burkervins in this draft.
You know, how big is Roquan Smith? What is Roquan Smith? He is
235.
Is he 235? Because that's like, I feel like 235 is like the line. He's 236 in the media guide. So yeah, that's probably pretty close to correct. Yeah, that's what we need. We know Roquan Smith. One thing I think people will forget about the Baltimore Ravens defense is that they dropped the best NFL linebacker right into the middle of it, and it definitely made everyone on the team better. So Roquan Smith was a difference maker. If we overinvest in linebacker this year, don't be like, oh no, we traded back and then we picked Peyton Wilson. Well, maybe that's because, you know, you need that Roquan Smith in the middle of this Mike McDonald defense to make it
work. Or if Mike McDonald goes, hey, I coached Junior Colson at Michigan. I was part of the staff that recruited him, and he can run my defense.
We're running a second-round pick at him. Yeah, like that. It's fine. Like, don't freak out. I know everyone wants to invest in the glorious positions, you know, the offensive tackles and the wide receivers, cornerbacks, pass rushers. Those are the positions, but you know, you need everything. You need it all. So yeah. Anyway, let's go to the money zone. There are many ways to support the Seahawks Nest podcast. The best way to do so, head over to patreon.com/Seahawks Nest for as little as $1.24 a month. Join the Discord, come hang out with us. Thank you to those who support the show: Manuel, Andy, Brett, Cooper, Do It All for the Tucci, Evan, Floctimus, Gavin, James, Jost, Joshua, Lucas, Malcolm, Ryan, Sam, Samuel, Timothy, Terrence, Tom, Warwolf, Astro, Blake, Bob, Carl, Casey, Cracksnacker 420, Daniel, David, Feet Meat on Rifles, Jay, Luke, Michelle, Mike, Noah, Poops, Thomas, Brandon, Nick, Chip, and everyone else who supports the show. You guys are awesome. And one day I will update those levels so that you don't have to be on the Russell Wilson level anymore. Although it makes me laugh every time I see it. So maybe I won't. All right. This week I was, you know, as I'm wont to do, I look at what are the upcoming movies coming out? You know, what are the movies coming out soon that that could kind of inspire a movie club? And I saw that there's a movie coming out that had Mark Wahlberg and a dog, and that's all I knew about it. Kevin said, "Oh, I've seen the trailer for that. You know, they're running a marathon and they find a dog." And I was like, I knew nothing except for it was a Mark Wahlberg dog movie. And I thought, okay, what are the greatest movie dogs of all time? So me and Kevin are going to make a Fave Five. We're going to put the T-Mobile Fave Five. These are the dogs we'd like to call on our phone. So yeah, Kevin, start us off. What's a dog going into our fave five? We'll go two each because Eric's not here, and then we'll do one. We'll pick one that we kind of have to fight.
Sounds
over.
Good. I'm not allowed to do Forrest Whitaker, right? Even though he is the ghost dog.
Ghost dog. That is
not the correct type of dog.
I think it has to be an actual dog, not just like not ghost dog way of the samurai. Although Forrest Whitaker as ghost dog, if you have not seen it, you are missing out, because Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, 1999's film starring Forrest Whitaker with a soundtrack by the RZA, is awesome.
Just a delight.
Jim Jarmusch, like,
is so far up his own butt normally, but yeah, this is a movie where he's not so far up his own butt to make a good movie.
For some reason, like, this movie just hits. It's just perfect. So yeah, Ghost Dog, check it out. Okay, anyway, isn't it like Rashomon? Isn't it just like the story of Rashomon? Like, I'm
it is a retelling of another movie. Yes.
Okay, sweet. Okay, good, perfect.
All right, so I'm gonna go for cultural relevance in the first movie, or in the first one. Though I think, okay, so I'm caught on this. You tell me whether or not you agree with this, because I feel like it was the wrong dog choice for the movie.
Okay.
Wait. But I feel like Cujo is part of the cultural zeitgeist for what you call a mean dog.
Yeah,
but like, I feel like they picked the wrong dog for that movie. Yeah. So, okay.
And it's like, as far as movie dogs go, like, I think there's.
Then in that case, I'm going with Hooch from Turner and Hooch.
I was going to say, there are dogs in children's movies presented more, like, I don't know, interestingly mean? Than Cujo.
Yeah, the dog Hercules from Sandlot is more interesting.
That's what I was thinking, is like Hercules from Sandlot is like it's scarier.
So I'm taking Hooch from Turner and Hooch. Because there was a period in time where you had to team everything up with a various cop, and this is from that era of movie, and it's one of the most watchable of those movies. Dogs pretty lovable.
I feel like there's too many good movie dogs for you to be wasting one on Hooch from Turner and Hooch, but I will go roll with it. It's your pick. I cannot. I'm gonna go with Max from The Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
Oh, great choice.
Yeah, Max rules in every iteration of the Grinch. It's just an integral part of the story in a excellent movie. He's such a good dog. He loves the Grinch unconditionally, just as any great dog should. He helps him. He looks cute in the antlers. I'm all about Max.
He's kind of like the moral compass for him too. Mm-hmm. Like there are multiple scenes where Max is like looking at him like, and come on, man.
Okay, so one thing dogs in movies can do is it really is a clear establishment of like a good guy and a bad guy. And one of the ways we establish the Grinch is a bad guy in almost every version of the Grinch is he's kind of not super nice to Max. He's yelling at Max, he's treating him poorly, and like that is like kind of it's like a quintessential dog trope, right? Like people who are mean to animals suck. We all know this. Like we intrinsically know it in our hearts, right? Like
there's a reason we were okay with John Wick murdering everyone.
If you see a dog get hurt, you're like, dang, the people who did that are bad guys. So when we know the Grinch is bad because he's not nice to Max. And then at the end of the movie, we know Max is gonna have a great life because the Grinch, his heart grew 1,000 sizes or whatever. So yeah. No, I think it was three sizes, isn't it?
Three sizes,
I
don't know. Correct.
Oh, maybe it was three sizes too small, but
no one knew if his shoes or his heart were too small. At the end, it was the Grinch's heart grew three sizes that day. I would know. I read it to my class.
Okay, yeah. I was gonna say you probably have more knowledge than that. All right, Kevin, hit me with your next dog.
All right, character I found slightly annoying at first, but really has grown on me over the years, and that is Doug from Up.
Oh, Doug was on my short list, so I like it. I'm into Doug.
Doug showing you that a talking dog is both the best and the worst thing. Because
so funny.
Good comic. It's that thing where you insert the comic relief character into the kids movie, but the comic relief character actually serves a plot relevant point that makes you not hate them. Star Wars, take note.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also his name's Doug, D-U-G, because that's what he likes doing, and that's the kind of joke that I can get down with every time.
Okay, one thing I'll say is so far, we have not done any movies that I would say are like stereotypical dog movies. Like, you know, movies that are about dogs. And I just want to say, are we shortchanging our list by not doing that? Like, is that a bad idea?
Number one, I would argue Turner and Hooch is a pretty quintessential dog movie.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
But it's also, which is part of the reason why I put it on there. And okay, good. Number two, no.
So you're covering that base. You're covering that base for me then.
That was my goal. Because like, I'd rather have Hooch than Beethoven. Those movies are not very good, and Beethoven is not a good dog. Yes, I said it out loud. There's exactly one dog movie that I think is acceptable, but I assumed you were saving that for our joint pick.
Best in Show? Is that what you're talking about?
Nope.
Because what individual dog? That's the thing is, I was like trying to think like, what's the best dog movie?
It'd be
like,
Air Bud. You
said it. I don't.
Air Bud would be the other quintessential dog movie.
Air Bud.
I assumed you're going to nominate it for our partner pick because
but Air Bud is not good though. That's the problem. Air Bud is not good.
What about Sirius Black from the Harry Potter movies? Does that count as a dog? Can we do werewolves? Can I do American Werewolf in Paris?
I don't think so. But
oh wait, you still have to make your pick. Sorry.
I still have one pick, and I'm kind of talking through all. I'm kind of filibustering. You're hedging right
so that
now.
You can get the. Oh, what about Frank from Men in Black?
What about Toto from Wizard of Oz?
It's a solid choice, but Toto doesn't do that much. That's the thing.
What about Goofy? Is Goofy a movie dog?
I don't feel like it.
Why not? Is Pluto a movie dog?
Okay, fine. Then Snoopy's a movie dog, and Snoopy's better than any of those.
Snoopy is a movie dog, and I thought about Snoopy. It's like, I don't know.
What about Slinky Dog from Toy Story?
Slinky Dog from Toy Story does cool. And he has like all-time great voice. Like, one of the best animated. Who was the original Slinky Dog? He died. He passed. Why can't I remember this right now? This is like the kind of thing I usually remember right away. Here, I'm gonna look it up.
It was a guy who does westerns, wasn't it?
It was no Slinky Dog was. It was Jim Varney.
Oh, dude. Duh.
Yeah. Duh. As soon as I said it, I was like,
we have to put Slinky Dog on for Jim Varney.
Oh, Jim Varney rules.
R.I.P. Jim Varney. Just absolutely great. Ernest P. Worrell.
The only thing I wouldn't like about that though is that now we're making a list of the best dogs in movies, and three of them are not actually dogs. They're just animated depictions of dogs. So they're not even actual dogs. Who needs dogs? Just animate your dog. All right. Anyway, let's go. Okay, so I'm putting someone in right here. Right? I just get to pick one. All right, let's go with. This is so hard. This is nearly impossible what you're asking me to do. But I'll go with. Okay, can I tell you what I'm between?
Yeah.
Okay, because I did think about putting the John Wick's dog in there, but I was like,
would you do Daisy from the beginning or the unnamed pit bull from the end? Because I would do the one from the
unnamed
end.
Unnamed pit bull, yeah.
Okay,
The one from the end. Because Daisy deserved better. Okay, I'm thinking, okay, the dog from Legally Blonde.
Okay.
Okay, the dog from Barf from Spaceballs.
That's almost as bad as Ghost Dog.
Come on.
Here's the thing, though. Right. He specifically isn't a dog. He's a Mog, half man, half dog. He's his own best friend.
All right, that's fair. All right, I'm going Baxter from Anchorman then.
Okay, acceptable. You had an entire loaf of cheese and pooped in the fridge. I'm not even mad.
Very funny, like dog that moves the plot forward. Very cute dog. The funniest part of the movie where like Jack Black punts the dog off of the bridge. Like just and is absolutely integral
that to bike's the only plot. Thing I love.
and then when he comes back at the end and saves Ron
it's from just the bears, perfect. Yes,
it's just perfect. The perfect dog character in a movie, just amazing.
Good choice.
I'm gonna go Baxter from Anchorman. All right, Kevin, what's our co-choice here? Is it Balto? No,
is it Air Bud?
Definitely not Air Bud. But. Okay, Buddy from Air Bud. Let's just talk about Air Bud, okay?
Those movies are so bad.
It should not have been. Like, why did it get, like, seven movies? These movies must be so cheap to make.
Yes.
Like, that's basically all I got. What about Rolf from the Muppet movie?
I like how you're concerned about our representation of real dogs, and you're proceeding to try and get John Candy...
I just put a Muppet. I just put a real dog in. That's what that I was trying to cover the base.
Frank from Men in Black, I think, should get considerable looks. Okay. What about Milo from the Mask movies?
Okay, that's a good one. How about Sam from I Am Legend? Like a big part of the movie.
Yeah.
And is like pretty good.
What about Hercules from the Sandlot? That actually is a really good
Hercules
one.
From the Sandlot. Let's do it. Hercules from the Sandlot's perfect. Okay. So Hercules from the Sandlot. So our dogs in movies list. Hercules from the Sandlot, Max from what Grinch Stole Christmas, Doug from Up. We went Baxter from Anchorman. And
Hooch from Turner and Hooch.
That's a nice list. And we never mentioned Isle of Dogs until now. So for Kevin, for Eric, we will see you next week. Go Hawks.